direct from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal This Weekend with Gordon Deal.
The man who challenged the small print in the Affordable Care Act. I'm Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
A South Carolina lawyer is one of the people credited with identifying controversial wording regarding health insurance subsidies.
How hospitals think they can improve the quality of care while reducing readmissions. You'll hear the new approach.
Mixed martial arts fighter Ronda Rousey has a new challenge. Find out how she's taking on Hollywood.
And why it might be time to change running shoes.
For decades, the typical running shoe silhouette has been largely the same. It's been a raised, cushioned heel, and that kind of tapers down to a fairly flat toe. And what a lot of people are doing is rethinking that silhouette in light of, among other things, the barefoot movement of a few years ago.
Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman on why your high-heeled sneaker might be outdated. She's here later in the hour. Wonder who some of the people were behind the lawsuit over subsidies in the Affordable Care Act. One of them is South Carolina employment benefits lawyer Thomas Christina, who was reading a statute of the controversial health insurance law to learn its impact on clients. By his reading, the wording only allowed health insurance subsidies to be provided through state exchanges. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. Stephanie, what's his story?
His job was to read through the Affordable Care Act shortly after it came out. And he's an employment benefits lawyer, kind of to look at how this will affect his clients. And as he was reading, he started to notice something in the language that seemed curious. It seemed to him that it would only allow subsidies provided through state exchanges. And that September discovery is really what's behind all the litigation and the concern about subsidies today.
Did he get a chance to speak with Thomas Christina?
I did talk with him. Other conservatives used his findings and arguments to continue to move forward with a lawsuit and take action. So he sort of was the initial finder, and then it grew from there. And he's very much like, I don't want to take all the credit, but the individuals who brought this forward through litigation all basically say he was the first catalyst behind this.
Did he have any idea, Stephanie, that his findings would lead to this?
Actually, he did. He said it wasn't like a lightning strike. It was kind of a gradual process of reading the language, and as he read it and did some double checking and talked with a coworker, he said he really realized this was a big enough issue that it could end up in the courts.
What else did you look into while writing this piece?
It was really a really interesting evolution of how this lawsuit kind of came to be. It was, you know, he presented his information at a conference. Somebody else saw it and thought this could be potential litigation. It's just very interesting how it all wove together in terms of this effort. Nothing really moved forward until the U.S. Supreme Court back in June 2012 upheld the individual mandate as being something that was legally upheld. And so then they kind of jumped on a conference call that day and said, let's go ahead with this as a lawsuit.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. Kind of an interesting behind-the-scenes kind of look you had there, huh?
Exactly. And I have to think the thing that's very interesting is that Mr. Christina is someone who's not known. There are many other conservatives who have been very vocal about this issue of the language with the statute and the subsidies. And this is sort of the first time anyone's really looked at how this was first discovered and who was the person behind it.
Does he plan on being more vocal, or is he hiding away from everything now?
Sort of a low-key player in this. He's definitely been involved in the litigation as it's gone forward. At one point, he drafted some potential draft complaints that could be used. He's very much connected to the conservatives that have brought this forward. I just think he's kind of under the radar, and that's largely fits for his role as an employment benefits lawyer.
Stephanie, Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Is there a voice in your head saying you can do better with your finances? Well, know that you can do better. Save more for retirement and reduce costly broker and mutual fund fees with a free, easy, and secure tool called Personal Capital. In one place, Personal Capital aggregates all of your accounts like your 401k and IRA, shows how much you're overpaying in fees and how to reduce those fees. You also get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. That's the personal in Personal Capital. When you're ready, Personal Capital will assign an expert advisor to you to talk about how to make the most of your investments, both by helping to optimize your portfolio and reduce your fees. Take the first easy step. Go to personalcapital.com/WSJ to check if you're overpaying on your annual investment fees. Signing up takes just a minute. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions, on the web or on your smartphone or tablet. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. That's personalcapital.com/WSJ. Thanks for spending time with us. Hospitals think more bedside care from nurses will improve patient care and reduce readmissions. Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau says instead of hunting and gathering supplies and meds and doing paperwork at a workstation, nurses are spending more time in patients' rooms. She joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Laura, what's trending?
Well, you're seeing more of these hospitals develop care teams. We spoke to one that's based in Charlotte called Novant Health, and they've developed care teams which basically take some of these lesser skilled but still very skilled people, certified nurse assistants, LPNs, the licensed practical nurses, people who are able to do things that nurses used to do. They're also totally changing the way things work. So instead of making them run down to the pharmacy to find the drugs, the pharmacists will come and deliver the drugs to the floor twice a day. So they're only going down the hall instead of, you know, seven elevators down and to the right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. Also, having electronic medical records makes a huge change. You know, a lot of these hospitals are still getting around to adopting a single electronic medical record, putting computers in the patient's room so you can sit down with the patient and basically, while you're still talking to them and looking at them, say, hey, you know, looks like your tests have come back and I can show you a diagram that shows what your, you know, blood sugars have been doing. So there's more of that. So you can talk to the patients, you can educate the families, and just be a little more hands-on.
So what's it all expected to accomplish then, having a nurse spend more time at the bedside?
If you think about the way hospitals are today, in the old days, if something happened to you, you'd spend a week or two, maybe after surgery in the hospital. Now, they want you in the hospital and out as soon as possible. So the lengths of stays are shorter. Patients tend to be sicker while they're in the hospital. But if the nurse is not there to really kind of help them, get them through the rough part, educate them about what to do when they leave the hospital, you're going to have a lot more time when patients have readmissions. They didn't know what to do when they got out, or they weren't quite as well as they could have been, and they end up being readmitted. Mm. And that's something that hospitals are getting penalized for, you know?
Right, right.
And that's really a concern. And patients are older and sicker. You know, you have this aging population. You have people in their 80s and 90s going into the hospital. And frankly, you know, they might have died in the hospital years ago, but now they don't die. But they still need to be taken care of very carefully and watched. And families need to be educated about hospital to home. And nurses are the best ones to do that.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau about nurses spending more time at the bedside in hospitals. So are we going to see some sort of national rollout here? Is there a model that many, many hospitals are following?
Well, this is the model, the Transforming Care at the Bedside model developed by the Boston-based, Cambridge-based Institute for Healthcare Improvement and the nonprofit Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. These are two institutions that have really dedicated themselves to figuring out ways to improve the quality and safety of care. And by the way, the studies show that, you know, hospitals where nurses aren't spending time at the bedside have more problems. They have, you know, way more, you know, falls, complications, infections. You know, someone's not at the bedside, and you know, you've heard of those stories where they're pushing the call button, and you know, the movie, you know, Terms of Endearment, where you the image was of the, you know, the mom having to yell and scream down a hall for a nurse. You know, that shouldn't happen, and yeah. But that is the kind of thing that has happened in the past, mostly because the work processes haven't changed in 20 or 30 years that hospitals have, and you know, putting the nurses on doing everything. But now you have to kind of change that to adapt to the changes in the patient population, the changes in the financial situation of hospitals, where, you know, there's so many more complex needs. They got these shorter hospital stays. You get discharged sooner with more complicated follow-up care. And then yeah. You get these financial penalties if the patients have to come back after discharge. And by the way, remember, there's also these nursing shortages. And in a lot of places, they have to shift a lot of this care because there just aren't enough nurses to do everything that has to be done. And yet, everybody is licensed. The LPNs are licensed. The certified nurse assistants are licensed. But they're not all practicing to what they call the top of their license. In other words, they can insert that Foley catheter in your bladder, but maybe they're not doing it because they haven't, you know, been told to do it, or they haven't recently been trained to do it. So it's really just a matter of, in all healthcare, as we face shortages of doctors, shortages of nurses, you've got to get some of these other skilled clinicians to practice as highly as they can and do the most they're able to do.
You could probably help yourself as a patient if you were more pleasant, no?
Well, right? See, here's
sometimes,
the thing.
Sometimes yeah. I got to imagine that some nurses are saying, geez, you know, this guy, he's pushed the call button six times in the
exactly.
last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We have to go down there again to yeah. you know, whatever.
Well, there's that problem. But also one of the nurses that I spoke to at Novant told me, you know, older patients, which again is a lot of what you have in the hospital, they are actually the opposite of our generation, where we will push that call button 60 times and we'll complain about everything. But they won't. They're afraid to complain, or they don't feel complaining is the right thing to do. You're too stoic. And what they say is, the more I get intimate with my patient and the more that I spend time with them, getting to know me, getting them to trust me, the more they'll say, it really does hurt. Can you give me something for the pain? Or, I really need to tell you about this problem I'm having. So, it's really a matter of giving nurses more time to do the things nurses are best at, which is really taking care of patients.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau, who's based in New York. 19 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Time now for Gina Cervetti.
And this next week, we'll get the July jobs reports. Economists expect to see the jobless rate steady at 6.1%. Economist Bob Bruska says that data should be positive.
I'll say this. We get 200,000 jobs or more, it's going to make this a very, very strong string of months. We've already got over 1.2 million jobs created over the last 5 months. So this is going to be an important employment report to look at.
We also get the first estimate of economic growth for the second quarter, auto sales, and consumer sentiment, among other data points. 17% of homes were seriously underwater in the second quarter, down from 26% the year before, according to RealtyTrack. Now, these are properties where loans on the house are at least 25% higher than its estimated market value. How much does it take for you to say, now this is a decent salary? Career Builders' Rosemary Hafner says most people do have an idea, and most employees remain unsatisfied with their pay.
The vast majority of Americans still feel they're not earning their desired salary, and there seems to be this tipping point of wanting to earn at least $75,000 a year.
Apple reported recently that it made an almost $8 billion quarterly profit, but said that iPad sales fell. The Journal's Daisuke Wakabayashi says that with larger and larger smartphones, the tablet may take a back seat.
Well, at some point, the screen between your smartphone and tablet becomes very close. And so do you really need to have both? And laptops as well. The MacBook Airs are very light and portable.
Maybe you're gearing up for a back-to-school state sales tax holiday. Several states are having them soon. Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Virginia, among those with various types of sales tax holidays set for early August. Well, when it comes to ice cream, you probably have a favorite shop. TripAdvisor says the top spot is Island Creamery on Chincoteague Island, Virginia, with flavors like bourbon caramel crunch. In second is Deitch Brothers in Findlay, Ohio, home of German chocolate. And in third, Treasure Island, Florida's Super Scoops with Captain's Butterscotch.
Nice.
Now, I have a feeling this is going to be very controversial, because when it comes to ice cream, I know that people absolutely stand by the places that they go to get their favorites.
You know what's weird, though? I will eat any ice cream as long as there's butterscotch available.
So you put it on top?
I like butterscotch with a little ice cream on the side. That's how much okay. I like butterscotch. But I can't find it anywhere where I am in New Jersey anymore.
Oh, well, you're going to have to head to Treasure Island for Captain's.
Right.
Butterscotch.
Right. Climb in, kids. We're going to Florida. Dad needs ice cream with butterscotch. I just can't find it anymore. I don't know what it is. It's out of favor here.
Somebody's going to hear you, and they're going to come up with it, Gordon.
We'll see. All right. Thank you, Gina. 22 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing. So I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Thanks for spending time with us. You may have heard that Facebook reported this past week that profit more than doubled and revenue topped estimates for the ninth straight quarter due to strong mobile ad revenue. What's this mean for users of the social media site? Here's tech analyst Rob Enderle, who says the mobile ads are not exactly what they appear to be. Rob, how do you see this news?
We certainly were expecting it. They put a lot of focus on mobile, and the end result has been positive. They're getting much more revenue from mobile ads. The underlying problem still remains, though. We're seeing relatively low conversion rates. In other words, the number of people that read the ads and actually buy something is still coming back as really low, which means that the cost of the ads may be higher than the value. And if that corrects, of course, Facebook's going to have a problem. But for now, the numbers looked excellent.
All right, so who does it better than Facebook, say, in terms of the conversion rate?
The thing is that more traditional media does it better. Magazines and television actually have higher conversion rates, and regular internet ads seem to have higher conversion rates than those on social media. So there is an ongoing concern that people that are engaged in social media are simply looking at the discussions that they're watching, the interaction with the people that they're socializing with, and not really seeing the ads, or at least not seeing them in a way that is motivating them to buy the related goods.
So do you think it's a matter of time then before we will start interacting with these ads?
That's the question in mobile in general. The screens are so small, they just haven't lent themselves to ads. The exceptions, of course, are things like the ads that run on YouTube and in video format that force you to watch a television-like ad before you're allowed to actually watch the video. But if you look at even those ads, it's the same ads over and over again. It's the same one or two advertisers that are advertising in that medium, and it's not broad spectrum. And in fact, if you look at social media, back to social media, the people that are heavily advertising on that are a relatively small number of companies, which also suggests that if those companies aren't getting benefits, then that behavior won't spread to other firms, and the firms that are doing it might back off and focus other things that are providing a higher benefit.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle about the surge in mobile ads for Facebook. Google, as somebody said, is still the behemoth here. Is that true?
Yeah, well, primarily because they own a little bit of everybody's ads. They have the back end that handles a lot of the transactions for vast majority of transactions for advertising. So if anybody's making money, typically Google is making money. It's like having a shopping center with stores, and the shopping center owns not only most of the stores, but the guys that own the shopping center own the shopping center. So they've got a significant advantage over the social networks in that they own so much of the overall ecosystem.
Let me go back to this conversion rate for a moment here.
Yeah.
Do we need better ads for mobile? Is that the problem, or is it that we're...
I think for now the theory is it's actually more the medium than it is the content, but it certainly could be either. I mean, if we were able to point to an ad that had a high conversion rate, then we could say, okay, this works, and everybody needs to do this. The fact is we can't point to anything on mobile that's generating a lot of conversion, and the end result is it sounds like it's the medium. The mobile device, at least for now, isn't lending itself to advertising, and I do think it's primarily because the screen is so limited in resource. So it's unlike a web page. When you can look back at a web page and you can see ads on the side, they can catch your attention. You can 5, 6, 7 ads. One of them is likely to hit. But on a mobile device, you're lucky you have room for one ad. And so it's like the difference between shooting with a sniper rifle and a shotgun. With a shotgun, because of its spread, you're more likely to hit something.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle from San Jose. The whole conversion rate then makes you think differently about mobile ads, right? 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Coming up next, radioactive waste concerns in St. Louis.
I own a growing company, and predictable monthly expenses make it easier to run my business. That's why I switched to the T-Mobile Simple Choice for Business plan. We get unlimited data with no overage charges, all in America's fastest 4G LTE network. Now it doesn't matter how much data my team needs every month. My bill stays the same. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change. Fastest 4G LTE based on download speeds. See T-Mobile.com for details.
If you don't have a will, the court may dictate what happens to your property and minor children. Don't let that happen. It's National Make-A-Will Month, so call or visit LegalZoom today for special pricing on wills and living trusts. LegalZoom has been helping people protect their families for over 13 years. They make it painless to get the legal help you need. Don't forget to enter WSJ in the referral box at checkout to save more. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help, but they're not a law firm. Protect your family and future today at LegalZoom.com.
Powered by the most trusted name in journalism, you're listening to The Wall Street Journal this weekend.
Thanks for being with us on this last full weekend in July. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. And coming up this half hour, female fighter Rowdy Ronda Rousey takes on her next challenge, Hollywood Movies. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. Environmental concerns in St. Louis. Pressure is mounting to deal with the legacy of radioactive contamination and possible damage to human health caused by work done there for the U.S. nuclear weapons program. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter John Emschwiller. John, set this up.
A lot of the stuff was dumped into a municipal trash dump, and currently in part of the dump, there is a what they call a subsurface smoldering event, which means a heating up of trash underneath the ground, and there's this debate going on where exactly it is, and is it moving at all towards the nuclear waste, and if it is moving there and reaches it, what might happen. So that's causing a lot of consternation and worry in the St. Louis area. The government and the landfill owner have proposed building what they call an underground isolation barrier to try to block any this heat event from moving towards the trash, from moving to the nuclear waste. But they're still trying to find a place to put it, and there's still a lot of questions about when they can get it done and where they can, finally locate it.
How are people in St. Louis County feeling about this, John? Are they anxious?
There is a good deal of anxiety in some parts of St. Louis County. People who are nearby the landfill area, certainly there's a core of people who are quite worried, and there are elected officials who are very interested in it. There was just a letter sent last week by the two U.S. senators and a couple of the local Congress members to the EPA concerned about when is this isolation barrier going to get started and finished.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter John Emschwiller. You mentioned that years ago people thought this type of stuff was safe to throw out. So is this happening in other places?
Yeah, we did a series of stories last year for the Journal about the legacy of the nuclear weapons program, and there were literally hundreds of locations that did some nuclear work for the weapons program, and there are places around the country, from Washington State to Pennsylvania to New York, that have, still have issues related to lingering nuclear waste from the weapons program. St. Louis probably has got as big an issue as anybody because they really did a lot of work for the nuclear weapons program, especially during the Second World War and in the immediate aftermath into the Cold War. The factories of St. Louis were, a huge part of the weapons drive.
How did people turn to social media to share who might be most impacted by this waste?
Yeah, there's some people who lived in some of these neighborhoods and started noticing just anecdotally that their friends who were in their 30s, maybe early 40s, were getting cancer, and they seemed to be a lot of them. So they started thinking, well, there's something going on here. And they started researching and found out about the weapons work and the radioactive trash that had been left behind. And so they decided to open up a Facebook page and sort of invite people who had lived in the area or had relatives who had lived in the area to tell their stories. And they have, thousands of members now, and they've collected hundreds of stories of illness, a lot of cancer, but other maladies. They've presented this evidence, to the various health officials, which is one of the things that's helped spark the County Department of Health to decide we're going to take a look at maybe doing this major health study.
Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal reporter John Emschwiller from St. Louis. 22 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. Thanks for checking in. Might be time to change your running sneakers. A growing number of doctors, researchers, and sports medicine experts are shifting to running shoes that are flatter and recommending others do the same. Here's why, from Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman. Rachel, what's up here?
For decades, the typical running shoe silhouette has been largely the same. It's been a raised, cushioned heel, and that kind of tapers down to a fairly flat toe. And what a lot of people are doing is rethinking that silhouette in light of, among other things, the barefoot movement of a few years ago.
Yeah. So does that mean that this newer styled shoe that's flatter is better for you, or it's just mimicking some trend?
I guess it's a little bit of both. Some researchers are saying that there's evidence that a raised, cushioned heel just simply encourages people to run in a style that's more pounding and pounding on that heel. And if you notice, when you run barefoot, you don't usually run that way because it's painful. And so they're theorizing that if you lower that heel, it will encourage people to run with a more forefoot or midfoot stride that over the long run is supposed to be healthier.
If it's supposed to be, less stressful on you or better for you? The benefits are felt where? Like in your shins or your heels, your knees?
Well, in theory, everywhere. A raised heel, in theory, does pull your body a little bit out of alignment. I mean, that's certainly as a woman who wears high heels sometimes, I can attest to that. Yeah. And so even a lower heel, some people say, can sort of knock your body a little bit out of alignment. It can cause knee pain and other body pain elsewhere. And so the idea is, let's get closer to the ground, but maybe maintain a little more cushion, some cushion anyway, so that it's still comfortable to run, but that, you know, you want to run closer to how you run when you're barefoot.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal sports writer Rachel Bachman. She's got a piece about how running shoes are beginning to change their shape. So you're still able to get, I guess, the higher-heeled running shoes, if that's your preference?
They're still very popular. Some people swear by them. And, you know, some people are very loyal to one particular model and brand and just keep buying that year after year. But at the same time, some shoemakers are very quietly and gradually lowering those heels, I think because, you know, there's no scientific evidence that heels help, that they actually help runners avoid injuries. In fact, there's some evidence that the opposite might be true. So there's some long-term science that's lacking, but basically there's no proof that the running shoe that most people have worn for decades helps prevent injury. So some people are saying, well, why don't we try something else?
I would imagine, though, at least personally, it seems to me that the higher heel is more comfortable for walking, even if it's not necessarily better for you.
That could be. That could be. And a lot of running clinic directors take pains to note that we walk differently than we run. And so some of the things I'm saying about running shoes might not necessarily hold true for walking shoes, yeah, because it is a different stride. You know, people typically walk with their heel first, mm-hmm, and that there's no great hurt in that because we're not pounding. But when you pound, you know, you need to think about how you're running and what you're running on.
It still comes down to personal preference, I guess. There's no medical group that has come out and said, hey, for your long-term bone health or something, right, run this way or use this type of shoe?
I'm glad you asked, because the American College of Sports Medicine, as I write in the story, which is an association of sports medicine experts across the world, really recommends running shoes with a heel-to-toe drop of no more than 6 millimeters, okay, which, as I said, the industry standard right now is about 10 to 12 millimeters, and so it's about half of the heel height that most people are probably used to running on. So that's a pretty significant change, and these guidelines just came out this spring, so it's fairly new. But as I said, a lot of the manufacturers are following suit, and runners, we'll see. I think some habits die hard, and some of them will not give up those cushioned heels for anything.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman. It's 15 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. By the way, on your to-do list, check out the new WSJ radio app. It brings the latest episodes of this program, like the Wall Street Journal This Weekend, and all of your favorite Wall Street Journal radio shows to your fingertips. You can download the WSJ radio app for iPhone and iPad free at Apple's App Store. And if you're in the app-acquiring mood, you can also check out the MarketWatch Radio Network app, where you can hear a lot of your favorite MarketWatch audio as well. It's 12 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Once again, here's Gina Cervetti.
Well, this next week we get the July jobs report, and we also watch for the initial estimate of second quarter economic growth. Economist Bob Bruska says, remember, this is just the first take.
I don't think we're going to know what this GDP report is going to be until that final revision comes in. We're not going to make up for the weakness in the first quarter, but I do think GDP growth is back on track.
We also get new readings on consumer confidence, manufacturing, and services. If not having that 20% down payment for a new home is keeping you from moving, then you may have some options depending on where you live. Rob Crane is with DownPaymentResource.com.
These programs are very specific in some cases, down to even the neighborhood level or census tract level. Programs are offered by state and local housing finance agencies, and in some cases, nonprofit agencies.
And they may come in a variety of forms, including mortgage credit certificates, which lost favor for a while, but they're back in vogue.
Repayable or deferred payment, second mortgage or third mortgage. In some cases, they come in the form of grants and never have to be repaid. You also have affordable first mortgages.
As with any loan, it's important to know what you're signing up for, so do your due diligence and make sure you ask a lot of questions. Well, we're putting more into our IRAs, and that's according to Fidelity's Ken Hebert. We spoke with him earlier.
Year over year, we've seen the average contribution to an individual retirement account, an IRA, increase to $4,150, which is about a 6% increase over last year.
Hebert says he thinks the financial crisis was a wake-up call that reminded people they need to take more responsibility for their financial well-being. Amazon, which just reported a bigger loss, is hoping you'll join up with Amazon Prime Music. It's just added hundreds of thousands of songs and playlists. Lots of players out there in this space now, including Spotify, Apple's Beats, and Pandora. Let's say you didn't have to worry about money. Which country would you visit? A new Harris poll says the top answer is Italia, which has ranked either number one or number two for a while. In second place behind Italy is Australia this time, followed by Great Britain, France, and Ireland.
Heavy European influence there, huh?
Mm-hmm. Been to a few of those. I haven't been to Australia or Ireland or Great Britain.
Well, you know what? You can sweep into Europe for a week vacation. But to go to Australia,
you just need more time, a little bit longer flight, right?
It's a week to get
there. At least
there.
Where we are. Mm-hmm.
Then you arrive one day late, and when you come home, it's 3 days ahead of time or something like that, something crazy. Australia, definitely high on my list. Thanks, Gina. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this weekend. TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features are not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Seen highlights of Ronda Rousey, who joined the Ultimate Fighting Championship less than 2 years ago. She hasn't lost a match. The 27-year-old mixed martial arts star carries a 10-0 record and, as Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel says, quickly subdues female opponents with moves like a swift kick to the liver or an arm restraint that leaves rivals yelping in pain. But over the next year, Ms. Rousey, called Rowdy Ronda for her style inside and outside the UFC cage, is taking on a new challenger, Hollywood. Eric, tell us about Rowdy Ronda.
Ronda has been quite an all-star in the world of mixed martial arts, which for listeners who aren't familiar is a little bit like wrestling, but it's a lot tougher. I mean, it's a pretty no-holds-barred, a lot of blood flying around in the ring there. She was the first female UFC fighter. The president of the UFC, Dana White, said for years that he was not going to have women in the sport, but after meeting Ronda, he decided to expand, and she sort of ushered in this era of having women fight in the UFC octagon as well. But she is definitely their biggest star. She sells out crowds in Las Vegas, and she's now trying to see if that appeal can transfer to the big screen.
So what movie will she be appearing in?
Her first movie is The Expendables 3, which is the big cast, you know, the big ensemble of, some would say, has-been action stars like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. She's joining that cast next month, and then there's quite a flurry of deals. Next year, she's going to be in the film adaptation of the Entourage show, the former HBO show about a young actor navigating Hollywood. She's got an appearance in Fast and Furious 7, which is the latest installment of that car chasing franchise. And then she's trying to launch her own franchise, a project called The Athena Project, which is about a group of female counterterrorism agents. She's hoping that will be her Die Hard or her Terminator series.
You think that her charisma in the UFC can carry over into Hollywood?
And I think she is very appealing. She's extremely charismatic. She's 27 years old. This is, I think, something like her fourth career. I mean, she was an Olympian, and then she was a mixed martial arts, and now she was UFC, and now she's trying to be an actress, too. But she really, anyone that you talk to says that, you know, she may have been an actress in her own right without the fame that the UFC has afforded her, because she is extremely photogenic, and she's also extremely real, for lack of a better word. I mean, she really prides herself on telling it like it is, and being very upfront and saying things that not everyone maybe wants to hear, but certainly that she wants to say.
All right, thanks, Eric. Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel. So here's an example of Ronda being real. In his story, Eric writes that Ms. Rousey says she has something most other actresses do not, and that's credibility as a fighter. As Ronda says it, she's not some teeny tiny little actress who spent the whole day getting her face exfoliated. She says, I see some of these chicks doing these action roles, and I'm like, what is she doing? She looked ridiculous even running on a treadmill. That is Rowdy Ronda Rousey. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal This Weekend. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.